Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Thursday, October the 7th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, voting rights and more. Audio from Congress as hearings take place on voting rights and some other things you need to know about coming up next. Welcome back. I hope you're well on this Thursday, dear listener. There's so much has happened this week already, and I haven't even covered a whole lot of it, particularly what's happened in Congress here in the United States. I think one of the things that that people should be aware of is that there was a hearing this week on the Violence Against Women Act and the need to make sure that it is reconsecrated and passed. And Lisa Monaco, the Deputy Attorney General, was on Capitol Hill testifying. And one of the things that's interesting about it, I don't have the audio to play here, but one of the things that's interesting about it is that after the hearing is over, Marsha Blackburn, the senator out of Tennessee, the Republican, spent about 4 or 5 minutes on a hot mic, and you could hear it, talking to Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General Monaco, and some of the words were pretty sharp, and she seemed to be upset with the Attorney General's office, or upset with Lisa Monaco herself, the deputy. But I did manage to catch that audio. It's 4 minutes long, though, but I'm not going to play all of it. I'll play just a small part of it, and you can audibly hear what the senator's saying, and I think, quite frankly, she gets some of this wrong, and it sounds, well, I don't want to prejudge this too much or prejudice you too much, but why don't you just listen to just a few moments from the 4 minutes? I'm not going to play all of it. Here's just a few moments.
Of children.
This isn't about investigating anyone's center. I'd be happy to give you a copy of the one-page memo.
I think that is important to do, because the message that you are sending to parents, to individuals, is you take everything that we say, or we're not going to be there to protect you. And I think that that is a very dangerous place to be. And especially, you know, like the Nassar hearing, that is all about protecting young women and girls and showing respect for what they have endured. And the way the FBI fumbled that,
I absolutely agree. It's inexcusable, which is addressed here today.
Yeah.
I would address with Director Ray.
And then this memo last night looks as if you were second-guessing every parent who is asking the question about what is being taught.
So I hear you on the misperception, but I would ask you to look at the memo. I'd be happy to get you a copy right away.
The memo is, I understand that, but the FBI has no business doing this anyway. Casting doubt on parents because they are going to question and try to make certain how their children are being taught.
The FBI is not doing that. The role of the Health Department is to, as I know you well know, is to investigate crimes. It's about violence, and that's it. That is not.
It's not about
investigating school board members and others.
Parents who are concerned about what their children are being taught. They just want them to be taught and not indoctrinated. Yes, we'll follow up. Thank you so much. Yes.
That was Senator Blackburn on Hot Mic. Somebody turned the mic on and you could hear everything. And this is after a hearing on the Violence Against Women Act was concluded in the United States Senate. This was on Tuesday. I didn't even talk about this when it happened. There was so much going on. But that was some of the audio. And as you heard, Senator Blackburn is saying things like, well, the FBI or the Justice Department can't tell, you know, parents what to do or something like that, or you can't influence what, you know, is being taught in schools, and that's not right. It's like, how did it get from the Violence Against Women Act to what kids are being taught in schools? Oh, and the Justice Department is doing that. It was just crazy. Senator Blackburn, I don't even know. I really shouldn't even play. That's why I only played a short few moments of it, because I really want to avoid republishing lies and BS and misinformation and gaslighting. And I think that's the number one thing, well, not the number one thing, but it's one of the things, one of the very important things we all have to be cognizant of, particularly on social media, online, is to not republish BS. And when you see BS, make sure that you say, no, here's what the actual facts are, without repeating the lie that gets told. Because the more that people repeat the lie, the more embedded it is in a lot of people's heads. And I just think that when we're on social media, I think each of us, myself, you, everybody, has a responsibility to quickly destroy lies by putting out the truth, not by rebroadcasting what the lie is. I think we can do that. We can tell the truth without having to refer back to a lie and then start to republish that lie. Because when you republish that lie, you just put that out there again. And that's exactly what the liars want. That's exactly what the gaslighters want. So I think it's very important that we avoid that. But Senator Blackburn there, just totally out of line with how she's behaving toward Attorney General Deputy Lisa Monaco. And Lisa Monaco said, no, I assure you that's not what the FBI is doing. You heard her. I assure you that's not what's going on. That's not correct. That's a misperception. That's just a very kind way of saying, you're lying, Senator Blackburn. You're wrong and you're lying. That was how, because, you know, Attorney General Deputy Lisa Monaco, very, very, you know, nice and professional and kind and respectful, of course, in a forum like that or in any forum. And she gently just gently tells this senator that she's essentially a bumbling fool. And that's what a lot of these Republicans are about now. And they've been about for a long time, which is to pollute the air with lies, then make news headlines out of it. It's literally what they've been doing for 40 years, at least. You know, shout and scream the lie, and they know that they're lying. Turn around and make a spectacle out of it, and then go, oh, hey, this is what's going on. This is what this person's doing over here. And then, of course, the media runs to it like lemmings and covers all the lies, because the lies for them get ratings. And instead of just coming out and telling the truth, oh, no, we want ratings. See, this is what happens when you have corporations in media. Their profit line and their bottom line is profit. And I know people say the news is not a profitable business. Oh, is it? Isn't it? Well, let me tell you, there's clicks, there's retweets, there's ads. People make money off of Twitter. People make money off of retweets and likes. I mean, that is a fact. We all know that. And these Republicans will turn around at any opportunity to do that and then throw that in their campaign coffers. There's something called dark money. We are all aware of that. Jane Mayer wrote a book on it. She wrote the book on it, literally. You must read that book. And there, other people have talked about this as well. But Jane Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, last name, who is an investigative reporter at the New Yorker magazine. She's an excellent one at that. She wrote a book called Dark Money. And you really have to read it, where all of this stuff is coming from, where all of these Republican forces are coming from, these right-wing forces. It's a few billionaires that are financing them. And that's why you hear these people all over the place. They're trying to get rid of school boards. It's all dark money. They don't just independently come up with this money. So look, this is what Citizens United brought us. And this is the horror of Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision from 2010. So there you go. I just wanted to talk about that for a few moments. And I really do want to go on to something that happened today, earlier today. And it was let me actually go to something that happened yesterday that I didn't get to either. And that is a hearing on voting rights. The Democratic Senator John Ossoff was the chair of a Senate committee that held a hearing on voting rights and on all these laws that Republicans in states are passing that are eviscerating your and my right to cast a vote. Literally, I mean, this is functionally destroying voting. These are anti-voting laws that Republicans in many state legislatures are passing. So these are really, really important hearings, and I managed to record portions, or a portion, I should say, of a hearing so that you can listen to what was being discussed. And this was actually yesterday, and it was Senator John Ossoff. You heard also, you're going to be hearing, I should say, from Senator Marie Hirono out of Hawaii. Senator Ossoff is from Georgia. And both of the senators I've mentioned are both Democratic senators. And you're going to be hearing some of the people that they spoke to, who testified before this committee on the Senate on Wednesday, just yesterday. And one of them is Wendy Weiser. She is from the Brennan Center in New York. And I forget the gentleman's name that you're also going to be hearing from, who testified. I'm not sure whether he was a professor or whomever he was, but you're going to hear him as well. And I think the clip just speaks for itself. And I want you to listen to this because I just think this is really important. This runs about 9 minutes long. You're going to be hearing first from, I believe, Senator, I think it's Mazie Hirono, not Marie. So I'm not even quite sure. I think it's Mazie Hirono. You're going to be hearing from Senator Mazie Hirono coming up here, I think, right now.
When we talk about some of the kinds of voter suppression laws that have been enacted by the states, I think sometimes we don't understand quite how, with surgical precision, some of these voter suppression laws are. So Ms. Weisner, can you give a specific example of a voter ID law, for example, that is surgically targeted so that it makes it a lot harder for Black voters, for example, to vote?
Yes, thank you. And as you note, the inquiry into voter ID laws, it is not whether or not all voter ID laws are discriminatory. Yes. It is a case-by-case examination based on the actually particular design of the law. And some of the laws are very clearly both intended to discriminate based on race and are designed very clearly to do so. One that comes to mind is in North Dakota. There was a voter ID law that required a residential address on the identification itself, despite the fact that 19% of the Native American citizens in North Dakota lived on reservations without residential addresses, and they tried to change that, but it was, that was found to be intentionally discriminatory. The Texas voter ID law that Mr. Greenbaum referred to was found to be intentionally discriminatory by the district court and was ultimately found to have a discriminatory result, and it surgically surgically chose identification so as to have that impact. So it famously included concealed carry licenses as acceptable forms of ID, but not state employee IDs or state university IDs, which were disproportionately held by Black and Latino voters in Texas.
And those legislatures that are enacting these kinds of laws know very well whose votes they are suppressing, and that is why they're doing it. And I think it's just so nefarious. Voting is a fundamental right. And I am a naturalized U.S. citizen, and one of the first things I did when I turned 18 was to vote, because I considered that so foundational and fundamental, and we should do everything we can to make sure that everyone can exercise their right to vote. Thank you very much for what you are doing at the center. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hirono. Seeing no other senator seeking recognition, I'll, in closing, just ask each one more question. In the Shelby County v. Holder decision, again, the Supreme Court, as you affirmed in your testimony, Ms. Weiser, expressly invited the United States Congress to update the coverage formulas necessary for the Department of Justice to execute its authorities under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. We have taken that seriously and done that work, and based upon the evidence, we have drafted those updates. They are included in this legislation. And it is, in my view, vital that we restore those vital protections for American voters. My question, beginning with you, Ms. Wisner, if we in the United States Congress do not use the authority that we have under Article 1, Section 4 and the 14th and 15th Amendments to protect ballot access by enacting this legislation, what do you see for the future of voting rights, especially for minority voters in the United States?
Thank you for that question. There's no question we are at a critical moment with respect to attacks on voting rights, with vote suppression, voting discrimination, even efforts to sabotage election results, achieving fever pitch, discriminatory redistricting abuses, and court rollbacks of rights. If Congress does not act, I fear that there's no question that this vote suppression is not only going to continue to proliferate, but that Americans of color are going to be disenfranchised in large numbers because of their race. And that is fundamentally at odds with the promise of our Constitution, of our democracy. And this is something that Congress emphatically has the power and duty to stop. And I'll say that when preclearance was in effect beforehand, as Justice Ginsburg noted famously in dissent in the Shelby County decision, it was working very well, and throwing away preclearance just because we're not seeing a spike in discrimination is like throwing away an umbrella in a rainstorm because you're not getting wet. Well, we saw what happened after the preclearance went away. We got very, very wet. There was a deluge of voting discrimination measures, and that has continued, and it's getting more brazen. So there is an urgency, and we strongly urge Congress to act quickly to pass this vital legislation, as well as the Freedom to Vote Act.
Thank you, Ms. Weiser. Mr. Greenbaum?
And I would agree with my colleague. I mean, I think we're seeing the greatest attack on the right to vote since the Voting Rights Act was passed. And it's not surprising, because you have this state of affairs where there's a big hole in the enforcement power of the federal government and private parties to fight against voting discrimination, that you're seeing that because of this gap, you're seeing legislatures and others using this as an opportunity to introduce measures that are specifically designed to go after voters of color. And this is particularly true in those states where voters of color can make the difference in terms of who wins and who loses elections. We're seeing these laws being proposed and enacted in certain states, but a disproportionate amount of the activity are in those states where voters of color really are exercising their opportunity to vote and can make a difference in who wins and who loses elections. And unfortunately, it's coming from a very cynical place, You know, it's really disturbing for me as a career civil rights and voting rights lawyer to see sort of the cynicism that I think what you're seeing is you're seeing people putting putting their own interest ahead of the fundamental right to vote and being willing to do things that are in a lot of ways intentionally designed to make it more difficult for voters of color. And so it's absolutely critical, as Congress did in 1965, to go after eliminating discrimination in voting. It's absolutely critical that Congress in 2021 fill that gap that the Supreme Court has created and enact legislation that is going to allow people to exercise their most fundamental of rights, and that's the right to vote. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Greenbaum. Thank you again to all the witnesses appearing before the committee today. Before we adjourn, I'd like to enter into the record a report from the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights documenting voting conditions in states and jurisdictions previously covered under preclearance. This report covers New York, and that'll be entered in the record without objection. As referenced in the title of this hearing, my friend, Congressman John Lewis, and if you're a Georgian, an American, still feel his presence profoundly, though he's gone, and we have an obligation to live up to and honor his example. He said that the right to vote is, quote, precious, almost sacred. And I can think of no better way to honor the life and legacy of Congressman John Lewis as our country still mourns his passing last year than to restore the Voting Rights Act of 1965, for which he bled and nearly died, to protect that precious, almost sacred right to vote. And the hearing is adjourned.
You heard that. You heard all of that, and particularly Mr. Greenbaum there. I don't remember what his title is. Very significant. This is what we've been saying forever. This is what we've been saying forever. This is an attack on us. These Republicans passing these laws all across the country in these state legislatures, it represents their attack on us, on you, on me, on us. Black voters, Latinx voters, Native Indigenous voters, Asian voters. We are all under assault here from these Republican laws. And I'm telling you, as you heard Mr. Greenblatt there, and again, I don't remember what his first name is. I only just remember that his name was being called there in the hearing, as you just heard. He put it straight. This is an attack on Black folk. He didn't say that. I'm saying it. Black folk, brown folk, Asian folk, Native folk. We are all... These anti-voting laws are an attack on us. These Republican anti-voting laws are an attack on us. And as he mentioned there, and he wasn't specific, but I'm going to be specific. Black people are making the difference in these elections. Black women are making the difference in these elections here in the United States. And as I said in yesterday's episode, we voted for President Biden as a group, black people as a group. Around 93% of us voted for President Biden. And this issue, which you are hearing about again through the hearing that I just played excerpts from, a hearing that was actually held yesterday, is a real, I mean, you have to understand something, and I've said this before. The hearing that you just heard a portion of there was very important. And you now have a Democratic president, as I said yesterday's episode, who isn't doing nearly enough to combat this issue, to twist arms on Capitol Hill. I don't think he's doing it. I played you the audio from that town hall. That town hall is going to become legend. two things that will become legend out of this first year of the presidency of Joe Biden. Now, again, generally speaking, I think he's done a very good job, or a B-plus job. But he hasn't in some key areas. And so even though he's done some good things elsewhere, he hasn't done the good things in very important areas like voting rights. That is critical. And that town hall will be legend in Ohio back in July when he said, oh, well, you know, the filibuster is really, we really can't do anything about that because that's going to, you won't get anything done in the Senate. It's like, you're not getting anything done in the Senate now, dude. What are you talking about? And then, you know, and then the other legendary thing that comes out of this this first term is absolutely not doing a darn thing to get the Senate to get voting rights done. The House has got this done a long time ago. They got this done. They've gone with this. They passed the legislation and now it's up to the Senate. And the Senate is not doing it. Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, has stressed the importance of this. But again, they don't have a natural majority in the Senate. They do not have a natural majority. And what I mean by, and I made that term up right now, literally. What I mean by natural majority is they do not have an outright numerical majority in the Senate. It requires the vice president of these United States, Kamala Harris, to come in and cast a tie-breaking vote. And in some of these situations where you need 60 votes, that's not going to do anything for you because you need 6-0 votes in some of these things. I thought you needed 60 to get rid of the filibuster. But then I came across something that said you need at least 50 votes. I don't even know. I need to get that clarified for me. And if you know, you got to tell me. But I'm going to get that clarified. And then you've got people in the Democratic Senate who don't believe in abolishing this filibuster. President Biden doesn't. Oh, I don't really want to do that. Of course we should, but let's see what he said at the town hall back in July. Of course we should, but you won't get anything done. Yeah, right. We're not getting anything done now with voting rights. And this filibuster is a tool that has destroyed the progress of black folk forever, for over 100 plus years. And oh no, let's keep it because we won't. I mean, he's more concerned. I said this yesterday, but I'm going to say it in a different way. He's more concerned, President Biden, with keeping this system in place than he is with helping black folk get voting rights, helping all of us get voting rights, but particularly black folk. The black folk, we who voted for him in larger numbers than anyone else. And that's why I was really impassioned yesterday about this, because I don't think he's doing enough. Now, I get it. It's up to the United States Senate. But what I mean is, when I say I don't think he's doing enough, with his cachet as someone who was on Capitol Hill for nearly 40 years, he should be doing a lot more than I think he's doing. Now, look, I'm not there. I'm not in the meetings. But obviously, whatever he's saying and doing is not enough. Because the Senate would have snapped to right now. They would have snapped to attention right now if he had. But like I said, Joe Biden's a schmoozer. I said this before in a few episodes ago. He's more concerned about being liked. He's more concerned about, ooh, I don't want to ruffle feathers. I just want to say hello. But come on, we got to get this done, you know? Yeah, I don't want to, like Joe Manchin said this. I played the audio for, I think, in yesterday's episode. Well, you know, yeah, the president, he's such a nice, lovely guy. And, you know, he said, Joe, I don't want to get in the way of your convictions on this. That's how Joe Biden is. Joe Manchin just revealed to you who Joe Biden is. You know, I'm just a schmoozer. I'm just here to be liked by both sides. Both sides. That's Joe Biden. You know, he does not lean on the scale enough, except when he wants to, foreign policy, except when he wants to in certain instances. But when it comes to paying back the people who put his behind where it is now, well, missing in action. I don't know. We really can't do this with the filibuster. We got to. Otherwise, we won't get anything done. Well, we're not getting anything done now. And here's where you and I come in. Because that hearing that you just heard a few moments ago, the 9 or so minutes of it, is really important. We have to stay engaged, number one. I think also you've got to follow Democracy Docket on Twitter. Democracy Docket. D-O-C-K-E-T. Democracy spelled the way that it's normally spelled. Mark Elias, who I've talked about, runs Democracy Docket. Sign up for the newsletter there. He gives you updates on what's going on with the efforts by his organization, by him and other lawyers, fighting against Republican voter suppression, because Republicans are doing this. It's anti-voting. And his newsletter gives you updates on what's happening all across the country and all the lawsuits that he and his team are issuing to fight back. But he can't do this by himself. And he's not the only lawyer that's doing it. He's not the only group that's doing this. But he's one of the most prominent. And we need to do everything we can to support those efforts and any other efforts to fight anti-voting in this country. Because the Republicans do not want you to vote. And they certainly don't want us to vote. Black folk are not allowed to the voting party. And that has happened historically and it's happening now. And we have to stay active. We have to lobby our senators. We need to be calling Republicans and Democratic senators. We need to be calling them both in the United States Senate. The House gets it. The House has already passed this legislation. And we have to call we have to call Democratic House members and thank them. 202-225. Can't believe I forgot that. Man, I've said that number routinely, right? And now I completely forget. Oh, my goodness. But I think it's 202-225-3121 and 202-224-3121. I believe that's the phone number. I will make sure to confirm that in short order. This is the congressional switchboard. It will get you to the people that you need to speak to. And you can only get to speak to one at any given time. So you have to give one name out, and then the switchboard operator will patch you through to that senator or house member's line. And I think that you really should do this. You know, this is something that we all must do. And again, the two numbers are, as confirmed, 202-225-3121 or 202-224-3121. That's the congressional switchboard in Washington, D.C. Now, if you are able to do that, please make these phone calls. We have to stay awake here, otherwise we're not going to be able to vote at all. And we don't even have, I keep saying this, the democracy we have is very little. It's only for one small group of people. And even though at present you can vote, at present I can vote, the fact that you have all these restrictions in a lot of these states now means that there really isn't democracy, because there is no democracy when white people in Madison, Wisconsin, wait for 10 minutes, if that, to vote. And they're in and out of there within 20 minutes. And if at all, I mean, they may not even have to wait. They may go straight in and come straight back out. That is not democracy when you've got, I mean, it's not democracy when you've got that. And then you've got in Milwaukee, the 75-80% black city, that you've got lines that are long and last 5 hours. Just to wait is 5 hours to get in to vote. As it was in the primaries in 2020, where you had people waiting for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. While in Madison, Wisconsin, not all that far away, you had predominantly white voters just walking in, casting their vote and leaving. In the literally doing all that in the space of about half hour or less, while you in Milwaukee were still waiting online, catching COVID. It's not democracy. How is that democracy? When one group of people gets to walk in, like the song says, walk right in, step right back. I mean, that, and then just go straight in and come straight out, and then your ass is on a line for 5 hours, 4 hours, 3 hours, waiting to get in. And then there are far less voting machines once you do get in. Whereas in the other city, Madison, and this is typical of cities across the United States, there are more voting machines than there are people. That is a conscious choice that's being made by the local municipalities, by the elections board. Those are local choices, conscious choices, systemic choices. And that's why I say all politics is local, and we have to engage locally, because what you are seeing are these efforts on the front end and on the back end. And it's not pretty at all. You are going to be waking up in an overtly fascist and totalitarian country. Some of us would say that this has been going on for a long time, that we've been living in that type of a country for a long time. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I really do. I think it's been creeping louder and louder, but I think it's always been here. If you look back at the history of the country, the merger of corporate and state interests, right? That is what fascism is, as the nominal definition. But that there's other forms, though, that go beyond that. And what you are seeing now is truly frightening. And I just hope that people can peek out of their iPhones long enough, peek up from out of the screens of their iPhones long enough to realize what on earth and what the heck is going on. That's why I play these clips, dear listener, because you may not have been privy to some of this. And you need to spread the word about this. I just want to just say that. If you are a listener to this podcast, please don't just keep this information to yourself. Please spread this to your friends, to your family members. Make people aware. Send clips of this podcast to them, or pass the podcast on to them. Pass the episode on to them. Please do that. And if you're not doing that, please do it. Because this is important. This is knowledge and information that needs to be shared and spread to people. Because we're all, not all of us, but we are good in general. We in general are good at rebroadcasting the lies. But we need to be far, far better about rebroadcasting what the truth is. And we need to be better at rebroadcasting podcasts that are dedicated to information, facts, and you being an informed person and being asked to do things. We need to be rebroadcasting any podcast like that. We need to pass that information on. Not just my podcast. I said any that is vested in facts. That is our responsibility. Whether we retweet it, whether we pass it on in a link, in an email to someone, whether we tell friends, family, we've got to pass this on. And we have to have that conversation and say, what is our plan for these 2022 midterms? I've been talking about this for over a year now. Find somebody that you are friends with, or someone in your family or your spouse or whomever, and really put together a brief log line of three of the issues that mean the most to you. Find out what your local politician's doing about them, where he or she stands, where they stand. And also on the state and federal level, you need to be doing this. Find out where these representatives stand, please. Find out where these senators stand, please. Find out. And have meetings about these things. And become an organization. Or join one. Join an organization. These are the things we've got to be doing. We have to. We can't just wait until the election comes, then vote, and then go home. We need to have savvy and knowledge about what's going on around us. As I keep referring to James Baldwin, if you don't know what's going on before you, you don't know what's going on around you. And we need to know what's going on around us and what's gone on before us, so that you can understand what's going on and why these attacks are happening by Republicans. I think it's pretty clear why they're happening. And now it has to be clear for us to start getting active and proactive. You need to call the DNC. You need to get in contact with Jamie Harrison. You need to get in contact with these senators, more so these United States senators in both of these parties. You need to get in on top of on that particularly. 202-225-3121, 202-224-3121. Either number does work. It does the trick. So I want to emphasize how important that is, because we cannot afford to leave this to the next generation. We need to be the platform for the next generation. We need to supplement what they're doing. And we need to lead the way as well. Both generations can lead the way. But I think some of us are too wedded to our iPhones than we are to what's going on around us and outside and beyond the iPhone. I mean, I saw it again earlier this week in a, I think it was 2 days ago in the playoffs, when the baseball playoffs and, or pre or play-in games. I think it was, it was a playoff game, not a play-in game. And then the bottom line is, I don't even remember, but the bottom line is there's a baseball game and someone's there staring into their phone while the game is being played. And again, this has happened for a long time now. Why are people staring into their phones while there is a game on right in front of them? But again, you know, we're constantly being distracted. We are distracting from our own mission. We are being distracted from ourselves. Really, we're that distracted. And we don't feel good, it seems, some of us, unless we are distracted. We don't have a attention span that lasts more than 5 seconds, some of us. And that's really sad. When you're gaming, when you're doing this, when you're doing that, you have no attention span at all. It's very sad. And that's the cultivation of technology and automation that we are going through, and the end of manufacturing. The manufacturing era is dead. It's gone. And now it's all about technology. It's all about automation. And that is what is destroying us as human beings, I think, among other things. We need to be able to start going to town. And what I mean by that is we need to be active. We need to be making phone calls. We need to be volunteering. We need to be educating. We need to be speaking to politicians. Request meetings with them to the extent that you can. We need to be joining organizations. We need to be running candidates ourselves. We need to be getting out there and running for offices. It doesn't have to be the largest offices. It can be dog catcher. It can be school board. The school board thing is a huge issue now in a lot of states. These Republicans with their dark money are recruiting people to go around and say, recall the school board, recall them, recall them. It's happening all over the country. And education is the foundation. And if you don't have a school board that's standing up for you and your child and standing up for better education, better facilities, better protections for teachers, better pay for teachers, better curriculum, one that is not all about Rush friggin' Limbaugh, and one that is about the history of the country. That's what we need to be learning about, the history of this country, not about Rush friggin' Limbaugh. Oh, we don't want to teach critical race theory. That is just a campaign trick that people are being seduced into by Republicans. Loud screaming and shouting, frame the narrative, frame the agenda, and have everyone react to our lies. That's what the strategy is with the Republicans, and it always works. Instead of us bringing up a proactive narrative. Many of us are forever reacting to the lies. And instead of reacting to the lies, we need to be spreading the truth. We need to be spreading the facts. We need to be spreading our agenda. We need to be proactive. Do not be surprised if this happens next year and you're seeing Republicans in all these offices. The House majority that the Democrats had is now at 7 or 8 or 9. It was once at 30. And after the debacle of those midterms, which no one of those elections in November of 2020 in the House, which no one really wants to talk about anymore, if at all, the House Democrats really crapped around last year, almost a year ago now. They crapped around. Terrible. And no one's talking about that. Why was it so shambolic? Well, I've already talked about why, but I'm now asking rhetorically, why was it so shambolic? Why? Why? So that we can now make a noise about how important it is to vote now? Well, it's always important to vote. But why did these moderate Democrats fare so poorly? Why did they run poor campaigns? Was it self-sabotage? Why? I don't know. I'm just saying, dear listener, I don't know. It seems, as I've said before, that some of these Democrats, many of them, are more interested in power than in winning. And that may not make sense to you, but think about it. If you can be the party in power and then be the minority party, you're still in power, but you just don't have control. And if your personal ambition is ahead of the future of the country, you need to go. And that's why I've been critical of President Biden in a lot of these things. I think he's done a good job so far. I think he's passed some, he's got some important things done. But again, the America Cares, the Infrastructure Act, we're hoping will get passed. But, the COVID relief bill. But what he's done really poorly on his foreign policy. Okay, Afghanistan, he was in an impossible situation. My whole issue there was is that I don't think that the exit was thought out, thought, out as well as it could have been. But I will say that he was in an impossible situation. I think he did the right thing. So I've got no criticism about him leaving, because we should have left there many years ago. Shouldn't have gone in there in the first place, quite frankly. But the thing that sticks with me that is damning on President Biden right now is voting rights and how indifferent he has been to getting rid of this filibuster, how indifferent he has been to dealing with voting rights for the very people he proclaimed last November 7th, 2020, that he was going to have the backs of. Publicly and loudly proclaimed it. And he's done nothing since. Not nearly enough, in my view. There's no excuse for that. Especially when black people, as I said, were 93% of the people who voted. 93% of the group voted for Joe Biden. 93% of black voters voted for Joe Biden. And so far, we've got less than 7% of anything from President Biden. We haven't had 93% of anything from him. Don't tell me about Juneteenth holiday. Don't tell me about it. It's just really poor. And as I said earlier, Joe Biden is more about schmoozing and being liked and just holding on to power than he is about getting rid of the relics of power and relics of a system that keep us oppressed, that keep us in these positions of waiting on lines for 12 hours or longer to vote. You are President of the United States, sir. You really need to start getting a bit more aggressive about some of these things. Because we voted for you. And as you heard in the hearing, you need to start twisting arms, because black people and brown folk and other people, Asian folk who voted in large numbers for you, Asian voters voted in large numbers for for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Latino voters around 76%, and black voters 93%, if not a little higher than that. Between 91 and 93%. And you've not delivered for us. It's just, I get it. Oh, well, it's, oh, don't worry, Omar. It's only the first 8 months. It's only the first 9 months. I am concerned about this. I'm not waiting. Right? Oh, well, it's 9 months. It's the first year of the term. Go easy on him. No, I'm not going easy on him. I was one of millions of people, and I'm sure you were as well, dear listener, who worked their butts off to get Joe Biden to be President Biden. I celebrated like you did. Drank the champagne, sang and danced, had a little fun, enjoyed. And here we are now, almost 1 year later. Kind of like John Lennon, I almost want to say, so this is Christmas, and what have you done? I mean, it nearly is Christmas, and what have you done, Mr. President? When it comes to voting rights, this is the most important thing in the country. It really is. And I don't think you've taken the lead on this the way you should. People in the House have, the Democratic members of the House have taken the lead on it. Speaker Pelosi has taken the lead on it, and other people in the Democratic House, the Congressional Black Caucus, has taken the lead. And there's one or two people in the United States Senate on the Democratic side who have been very clear on voting rights, taking the lead. But where are you? Where are you? If you say you're going to have our back, then have our back. It's just pitiful. You want power. As I said yesterday, it's all he cares about is having power. He doesn't want to disrupt the mechanisms of power. He wants to just have power and have it warm his hands for 4 years or eight, most likely four, because Kamala Harris is clearly going to run. So, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I do understand. It's very clear where President Biden is. And again, many of us knew this about President Biden before we got in. That he was someone who just loved to walk the corridors of power, cozy up to it, and just keep executing that mechanism without really, really in the main providing any kind of change or being an agent of change in that system. No, yeah, it's not. No, it's not an agent of change. He's an agent of just keeping things rolling. And I've got to say that President Biden has got to start getting active in these affairs. We need to call the White House comment line and tell them that. 202-456-1111. 202-456-1111. Welcome back. So today in this episode, I've played you audio from what happened either yesterday or the day before. I actually want to play you some audio now of a couple of things that have happened today. It is really good to actually do that so that we are here in the here and now. And on this Thursday, there were a number of things. It's been a very busy week in the House and Senate, in the Congress. It's been very busy. It's been a very busy first few days of October because, of course, we had the start of the Supreme Court new term. The brand new term began this Monday, so just a few days ago now. 3 days ago. First Mondays, which is typically the first Monday in October or the second Monday in October. Well, anyway, it was actually this past Monday, I think. Or maybe it was the Monday before. No, oh my goodness. It was. The first Monday was literally this past Monday. because Monday was the, what, the 4th, which makes sense in my calendar brain. It was the 4th of October this past Monday. So the first Monday, every first Monday of October marks the beginning of the brand new United States Supreme Court term for the year, for the calendar year, or for the year, which carries over until the end of June of 2022 in this case. It starts from the first Monday in October of 2021 to, I think, the last date in June, the last Friday in June of 2022. And that's how it goes in every year. The first Monday in October of the year to the last day in June, that is a weekday of the following year. That's how it works. So just want to let you know about that. And as for today, I mean, there's some comments that I'm going to play you from Senator Harris, really brief. Oh gosh, how dare I? Vice President Harris, brief comments about the debt ceiling that I want to talk about, because it turns out, and I will talk about this a bit more, that there has been an agreement reached on the debt ceiling. And so, you know, that's really good. And good news, the debt ceiling will be raised, and I will get to that. But first I want you to, because I'm going to also go back to one other thing, but before I do any of that and confuse you completely, let me just play this clip from Vice President Harris today. This is a clip from her at a meeting. Actually, it was a meeting of a group of organizers or people in the White House, actually, who are on the Labor Union Task Force. And here's something that I keep saying Senator Harris, Vice President Harris said about the debt ceiling. This was before, let me just play this clip before I confuse you. Sorry. Here is Vice President Kamala Harris.
As soon as possible, we need to pay our bills. This debt, without question, was accrued by members of both parties, including $8 trillion from the last administration, from the Trump administration. We need to pay our bills, so let's get it done as quickly as possible.
Yes, indeed, Vice President Harris is correct. We need to pay our bills. I mean, if you or I did not pay our bills, what do you think would happen? Come on. I mean, there's so many millions of people who have student debt, by the way. Let me just keep mention that. And we're not doing enough to protect them. I mean, President Biden, when he was Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, from a previous administration, he wasn't for getting rid of student debt completely. He was about $10,000, $15,000 discounts. He didn't want to get rid of it completely. Why? Well, he's tied into the corporates, right? He's tied into Delaware. Delaware is a state where he was senator. Delaware is a tax haven for corporations. People get incorporated there all the time, and the tax breaks are damn good. Credit card companies are there. All kinds of places in Delaware making moolah because they're not paying big time taxes. It's a tax haven. And President Biden, you know, that's where he resided, in Delaware. Or at least that's the state that he was senator in. Not from Pennsylvania, he was senator in Delaware. So no, he doesn't want, you know, these loan companies, these credit, he doesn't want to say, let's get rid of student debt altogether, because that means his buddies aren't going to be making interest upon interest upon money upon interest upon money, and they're going to be losing money. That's what I'm saying. So no, he's not going to say that. I know, it's so cynical, isn't it? How disgustingly cynical is that from me, right? But it's what is going on, dear listener. What's going on? We have to pay our bills. Vice President Harris is correct, in my view. I agree with her. She is absolutely on it. We have to pay our bills. And she said $8 trillion or something, she said, I think, from the last administration, that criminal administration. I like the way it was said by a few other people that I've played clips about the last few days. 97% of this debt that Mitch McConnell did not want to have a debt ceiling raised on is from the piece of garbage who was in the White House for the previous 4 years. It's that simple. 97%. Only 3% of this is from President Biden and his administration. 3%. Now, if only people would scream loud enough that 97 freaking percent of this debt is from the piece of garbage, orange trash. Why aren't people screaming that out on the rooftops? When you've got all this toxic garbage going on right now, you know what I'm talking about. Why aren't people on Twitter going off about 97% of this is why aren't they doing that? Why aren't some of them doing that? Why aren't you doing that? Whomever this applies to. And instead, you're reacting to the garbage that you see. You're reacting to this. You're reacting to that. Okay, react. No one's saying you shouldn't. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm saying, what about being proactive? What about putting out the facts? What about educating people with the platforms you got? Some of you have got very large platforms. And we keep reacting only. And we are not being proactive. And you've got a 2022 midterm. Let's stick with that right now. I'm not even thinking about 2 years after that. Stick with what's in front of us right now. And what are we doing? Are we doing enough? Do you think you are doing enough? It goes back to what we can do with what we have. That's very inexpensive. And are we doing that with the inexpensive ways that we can do it? Are we calling Congress? Are we calling the White House? Are we engaging locally with politicians on a local level in our cities or municipalities? Are we organizing? Are we donating? Are we volunteering? Are we making phone calls? Are we getting involved in phone banking to voters? We need to be doing that. There's Color of Change. Get involved with Color of Change, an organization that is really good. Get involved with organizations in issues for issues you really care about. Whether it is Every Town, you know, Moms Demand Action to curb and reduce gun violence in this country and really get laws that protect people. And they are calling and have forever called for responsible gun ownership and gun sense and reduction in gun violence and an elimination of assault weapons. Get involved. We all have something that we can get involved in. Whether it is voting rights, whether it is women's autonomy, whether it's any of these things, it's very important. You've got people who are out there doing all these evil, nefarious, violent things. What are we doing? Are we getting into any good trouble? As John Lewis would say? Or are we just kind of lollygagging it, spectatoring it, waiting for the next shoe to drop, nervously anticipating 2022? Or are we actually getting our butts out there and doing things? Are we munching on the popcorn, or are we saying get your popcorn ready? Or are we out there being proactive, making phone calls, getting out there and joining an organization, starting your own organization, running for office locally? Are we doing that? I know some people are doing it. But we have to ask ourselves in this moment, what am I doing? What are you doing? Ask yourself that. And if the answer is zilch, make that answer, I'm doing something, by actually doing it. I'll come right back with one other thing.
Jesus. September's passed already. Let me revise my statement. Madam President, we have reached agreement to extend the debt ceiling through early December, and it's our hope that we can get this done as soon as today.
And that was Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of the Democratic Party today on the House floor, on the Senate floor, pardon me. And you heard what he said right there. And it turns out that not only did he hope, it actually happened. There was a vote, and the Senate voted 50-48 to extend the debt ceiling limit through December the 3rd, 2021. So that's only what? Just roughly 2 months from now. Two more months. Not very long, but long enough, right? So things need to get done. That needs to be ongoing. But that was a very important vote. 50 Democrats, of course, because who else would it be who would vote to extend the debt ceiling limit? Who else would it be, right? Because these Republicans are hypocritical. When a Republican is in the White House, they will vote to extend it. When a Democrat's in there, oh no, we don't want to do that. So what happened was the vote broke down. 50 Democrats, really 48 Democrats, the two independents who caucused with the Democrats, plus the 48 voters who didn't vote for this, they're all Republicans. 48 no votes. Goodness gracious, I can't even talk. 48 no votes, all Republicans. That needs to be shouted. These guys don't want government and they don't want the country to succeed. That's what every one of these Democratic candidates next year and right now needs to be saying. And also about what we as Democrats are going to do, what we have been doing, how we've been voting in the House and Senate. That needs to be out there. What we're going to do on this issue, that issue, the other issue, the other issue. That needs to be out there. Every one of these candidates has got to be aggressive. 50 to 48. All the Republicans who voted no. Two Republicans did not vote. They decided, no, we're not going to vote. Actually, Senator Blackburn, who I played audio from earlier, was one of them. Both of those Republicans, I forget the other one, who said, I'm not voting at all. But McConnell obviously told the two of them not to vote. Well, that's not obvious, but that's what happens in these things. And that was the agreement that was reached. And by virtue of that, there you go. Debt ceiling raised for two more months. Debt ceiling limit raised for 2 months. And we've got to get, this is very important stuff. It makes a real difference. Bills have to be paid, as you heard Vice President Harris say. And I'm glad that this agreement was reached and that the vote was done. And there we go. And by the way, the thing I want to say is that we have to be voting in these Senate races as well. The United States Senate is going to be huge here in 2022. That's next year. And 35, I'm going to repeat this again, 35 seats are up for grabs in the Senate. 20 of those are Republican seats, at least 20, maybe 25. We have to get these seats. We have to get these seats and have a sizable majority in the Senate so that people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema can piss off to the Republican Party, because that's basically what at least one of them probably is going to do, especially if we have a large majority. Or, I should say, more conventionally and less crudely, we need to have enough of a Democratic majority in the Senate so that people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are rendered irrelevant. If we were to win 20 of those 35 seats, we would have more than enough to end up with a majority, say 57, 58, I don't know, the math is a little off. 20 seats, 15 losses. 20 wins, 15 losses. That's a net of plus 5. That would put us at 55 or so in the Democratic side in the Senate. And we'd have a bit more power and leverage. Maybe we could even get to 57, 58. It'd be great to get to 60. Then we'd really be in business. But we need to get a majority, a very strong majority of these Senate seats in the United States Senate next year. Because we were disappointing from a Democratic point of view in the large D Democratic in the 2020 election. We barely got enough votes. And if it wasn't for the state of Georgia, the people of Georgia, we would be in the minority in the Democrat in the Senate. The Democrats would be in the minority numerically. So, you know, we got lots of work to do. And the work is cut out for us. And what I want to do is, you know, you just heard the vice president, and you heard Chuck Schumer just now. Now what I want to do is close out with something from a hearing that took place today, different hearing in the House, and it was on election audits in Arizona. And I don't want to go into detail, but this is one comment from Democratic Representative Stephen Lynch out of Massachusetts in the 8th District. He said this, and you got to hear this. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib spoke, but I don't want to play what she said, quite frankly, because it involves repeating the lies. And I mean, I think in some instances you might hear a repeat of some of that here. The reason I'm playing Stephen Lynch and not Rashida Tlaib is that Stephen Lynch really attacks the lie and just comes out and just blasts these Republicans for what they're doing and really impresses upon us to really look at what's going on here. At least I think that's what this clip represents.
I recognize Mr. Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gates, I'll give you an opportunity to respond to the fact pattern that was presented in your question. But first, I want to say that how shameful, how absolutely shameful the conduct of some of my colleagues has been in perpetuating this big lie. I just, you know, I chair the subcommittee on national security, and we regularly visit failed states. Spent a lot of time in Afghanistan, as well as other countries where there's one common denominator in these failed states, and that is there is no trust in the election process. For decades. In Afghanistan, the losing candidate always says it was stolen, and they undermine the ability of the winning party to actually govern. And while that has been a characteristic in other failed states, it's having the same impact on our country. It's undermining the faith in whoever wins, whether it's a Democratic Republic or Republican candidate. And that is shameful. It really is shameful that so many of my colleagues have followed the Trump lie. You know, this is all about Trump. Mr. Trump has had other occasions where he's questioned elections. Remember, he actually tweeted out when Romney lost to Obama, he tweeted out that, oh, the election was stolen. The election was stolen. Check the machines, he said. When Ted Cruz beat him in Iowa, Trump said he stole it. Anybody who look, I've attended several caucuses in Iowa. You got to physically be there. You got to raise your hand for your candidate. But Trump said it was stolen. And then months before this election, this past election, when President Biden won, he said, "Oh, the only way they're going to the only way Biden can win is if he's going to steal it." That is absolutely shameful. But it's more shameful that he has taken so many good people down with him. You know, history will remember the people like Mr. Gates and Chairman Sellers who stood up for democracy in the face of threats, physical threats to themselves and their families. And history will also remember the Quislings who backed Trump and his allegations that the election was stolen. So this is not only a day to stand up for what you believe in, it's also reputationally something that's going to be visited on your families. That you attack this country, you attack a legitimate election in favor of that man, President Trump. It's disgraceful. 62 cases were brought in court. None of them. And before Trump appointed judges, federal judges that Trump appointed, a lot of state judges that were Republicans, longtime Republicans. And they never, ever substantiated. Most of those cases were dismissed for lack of evidence. They never got to the merits. And yet you continue to support the big lie. It's disgraceful.
So I want to leave it there with Representative Stephen Lynch out of the United States House, the Democrat from the 8th District of Massachusetts. And that's exactly what's happened. I mean, we now have to maintain a proactive posture. There were officials there from the Arizona Secretary of State's office, or at least Arizona's Board of Supervisors, I believe it was. It was Maricopa County, more specifically. So let me get that correct. Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, the chair and vice chair. Bill Gates was the chair, not the same Bill Gates as the Microsoft. This is just his namesake, not related, not the same person. He is the vice chair of the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, and the person you that I would play you, but I'm not going to play either of them now because I just think, look, I think I've made the point. Both of them testified. The other person was I think Bill Sellers or Jeff Sellers or whatever his name was, and he's the chair of the Board of Supervisors of Maricopa County in Arizona, and they both testified to receiving death threats. And I'm not going to play it, but again, you're dealing now with this kind of culture, and it's always been in the United States. This is not new. So we have to study our history. We have to be in touch with our history. We have to understand that the things that are happening now did not happen in a vacuum, and they've always been happening continuously throughout this country's history. And we have to get active. Most importantly of all, we've got to get active. We've got to get proactive. We've got to educate people now. Educate voters. Educate your friends. Educate your family. Educate family. I'm serious. And if you can spend 10 minutes doing that, 5 minutes doing that, half an hour, whatever, you can spare. Because we need to be doing this here in the United States. Anywhere else for that matter. But we need to be doing it here in the U.S. Critical elections coming up next year. We need to be all about it. And we need to be all about it right now in 2021. Do not wait till next year. This is so important. It truly is. And yes, there's the scary stuff going on, right? And you're supposed to be there afraid. And if they got you afraid, that means you are doing nothing. Or at least you are responding to fear and you're not doing what you're supposed to do. At least I think that's what's happening with some people. Some people. That's why social media can be a really negative place. I can say that I've contributed to that in some ways. And in other ways, I can say that I haven't. I've been both positive and negative on social media. And I dare say you have too. We all have. It's what the moment requires. But even more than that, what the moment really requires from all of us, from me, from you, from all of us, is to be proactive and to educate people and to actively get out the vote. To join an organization, to educate, to organize, to run for office, no matter what office it is, mostly though on the local level, because I think that's very important. And to be aware of what's going on in local politics in your area. You really need to understand what's going on locally. And you also have to make sure that the senators and these House members hear from you, and the president hears from you. We have to make sure that they are responding to us and not to their donors. They can do both, but don't let them only respond to their corporate donors. You have to make sure that they respond to you. Make your voice heard. Get active. Get involved. Please get involved. Do not leave this to someone else. And the information that you've heard here in this episode, please don't just leave it to yourself and keep it to yourself. Pass it on. Seriously. And that goes for any, not just me. I'm not just solely being self-serving here. That goes for any podcast you hear where there are facts being told. Everything I say here is documented and can be documented in a heartbeat. I can check it in a heartbeat. I don't say things on here that I haven't already known, that aren't already facts. And if I make mistakes, I will make sure I hold up my hand and make it clear that I did and apologize. We have to get active. We've got to get engaged. We've got to get involved. And it starts now. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.